Welcome to Love at First Science, the podcast designed to dig deep into neuroscience, the human body, and anatomy. My name is Celeste. I'm a physio and I teach anatomy to yoga teachers. And this podcast is an archive of the lessons I've learned along the way in my attempt to bring a more science-based approach into the yoga world. Hey friends, thanks for tuning in. Just a quick reminder that I don't run any ads, so this podcast can only grow with your support. If you learned something new that you found useful, please do rate and review the podcast. And if you think the content can help someone get out of pain, improve their life, move without injuries, or even just feel more inspired, please share it with them. It would mean the absolute world to me, and you never know, we just might help elevate our community along the way. What's up, everyone? Today, we're going to be talking to Dr. Muksha Chauhan. She is one of the few physical therapists in the United States that can not only flash her orthopedic degree, but she's also trained in women's health. And this is what makes her such an amazing person to talk to, because she understands the body like very few people do. I'm a huge fan of her content on Instagram because she speaks so much sense. And I'm just excited that she gets to give her perspective on the whole core situation. You know me, I'm always harping on about the fact that we shouldn't grip the core. And I like to bring in people that are highly trained to really give their perspective as to why this is the future for us in the way we move our bodies. So guys, enjoy. This is Muksha. This episode has been broken up into two parts, and this is part two. I mean, a question I get a lot, when I was hoping maybe you could give me some tips on how to answer this question, is people are like, okay, so if you're not cueing the core, what do you cue? And so I obviously have been doing what Z Health has taught me, which has been incredibly helpful, which is more the use of external cues. Mm. But I think going back to what you said earlier about working with people who actually do need their core to be cued because they've had a baby or they've had an operation or they've been bedbound, can you just give me maybe a range of different things that you would attack maybe that population, a population that's kind of a bit dysfunctional, yeah, and a population who's actually... We don't even know if they have an issue, but we do need to give them some kind of guidance on how to support the middle of their body.
So someone who has absolutely no awareness of their core, again, based on the PNF principle, we put them in the easiest position possible, which would activate their core. So again, I may use the cue that think about the tension wire or the, like, kind of like a draw-in maneuver. I never say like, pull your belly button in, because that's just going to activate everything and just tense the abdominal wall, which is going to reduce the excursion of the diaphragm. So I don't usually give that cue, but mostly like a very subtle tension. It's almost like you're just very subtly bringing the two sides of the pelvic bone towards the center, and then activate, give them a cue for the pelvic floor as well. If that doesn't work for them, then I don't tell them what to do. I just let my hands do the job. So I put them in a position which is basically a tabletop position, but a little easier, bringing the knees directly over the belly button, and give them a traction, a very light tactile cue on their knees, which is basically almost like pulling off a skin towards the ceiling, which activates their hip flexors. Not the global hip flexors, but actually the tonic muscles in the hip joint, which irradiates into the core, and they Amazing. Start to feel a little tension in their lower abdominal. So once they feel that, like what I am looking for, once they have that awareness, it becomes a lot more easier to get the feedback from them. Okay, is this exercise too much? Are you feeling you have to tense a lot? Are you clenching anywhere else? Are you feeling tension in your neck muscles, in your jaw? If you're feeling tension in your entire body like that, it's more likely you're using global muscles rather than, you know, your local tonic muscles. So that's one of the very starting point for me. If they are having even difficulty holding that position, I sometimes roll a towel and put them under their pelvis, so the pelvis kind of stays in that position, and then give them that cue. So always, first thing is always awareness of what I am trying to achieve for them. So once they know...
Sorry, I just wanted to interject that there's one thing that I want everyone to take away from this conversation, is that... You know, you said put them in the easiest position, because very often with core, we're like, let's put them on a wobbly round ball that's going to make them want to fall over. Yeah. This is going to help their core activate. And then let's give them a one-arm plank. Like, it's just not appropriate.
Yeah.
And that's probably why people are having to over-cue the core, because they're doing things that are just far outside of their capabilities.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. And this is so important. Like, we don't want to underload the core, but we don't want to overload it too fast, too soon either. You know, that's, and that balance goes with, you know, your clinical experience, how many times you have worked with, you know, complex cases. So it's really, you know, you have to kind of like take a little step forward, take, you know, one step back, and kind of that's why individualized therapy is super important for people with, who like, abdominoplasty or diastasis recti or like extreme severe pain, you know, like with mild to moderate pain, you can challenge people. But if someone is coming in with severe pain and they cannot even move from one position to the other without having an excruciating pain in their back or pelvic floor, you don't want to give them too much challenge too soon. You know, they're not going to come back. So exactly. I start with the easiest position. I do a lot of stuff in either on supine or in side lying, PNF patterns. That's what I do, tactile cues, verbal commands. And I use a lot of, again, like it's going to get a little technical, but I use a lot of pelvic girdle movement patterns. And the beauty about PNF is we are not doing things in this one sagittal or like frontal plane. PNF is all about doing more daily, like more day-to-day kind of movements. So we involve a lot of diagonal movement patterns.
Nice.
Because day-to-day activities incorporate rotational movements as well, which a regular strength training may not incorporate. So I have noticed when rotational movements are involved at a very light, like not big rotational movement, but small rotational movements, they actually help activate the core without you knowing. It's just going to happen. It's just going to happen. Just trust it. Just trust the process.
Just trust your bodies, guys. Thank you for saying that.
Yes, because again, these movement patterns are genetically encoded. If we put ourselves in certain body positions, if we give them the right cue, the core
it's
is
a reflex. Can we just
reflex? Yes, exactly.
Acknowledge the fact that you've got reflexes that are a million times faster than your conscious brain could ever produce a command. And PS, if you're constantly utilizing a conscious command, you're ruining the reflexive ability of the brain to initiate these movements without the need for you to think about it. Like, it's just, you're ruining it. Everyone just needs to chill out. Let's say we've got someone, they've got a bit of dysfunction. You haven't really, let's use yoga teachers, which is my main audience, as an example. They're teaching a yoga class. It's very challenging. Let's be honest. How hard is it to be a yoga teacher?
Oh, yeah.
They've got a room full of people with varied abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And what do they say? Do they say anything? Do they say nothing? Like, what is the right thing for these people to do?
That's a very good question. Yeah, I mean, again, like, it's very difficult for a PT to answer this because I haven't really treated a room full of, like, I have this wonderful opportunity to cater the treatment exactly to that one person and feel good about myself. But yes, you guys have a very tough job. So, I mean, it could be the lowest common denominator. Like, okay, let's talk about alignment. You know, again, alignment posture, another topic.
It's a dirty word, I know.
It's a dirty word. Like,
are you wanting to go there? It's like talking about the Democrats and the Republicans.
Yes. Okay, you don't want to overemphasize it either, but yes, there is something, you know, these.
You feel it.
You feel it, exactly. So I think alignment is important. I don't go crazy like, okay, you can never move out of this alignment and this is the perfect posture. You're going to be sitting all day long on your desk. Cannot happen, will not happen. But can you move in and out
and
of that, whatever neutral posture you have? Are you aware where you are? What is your body's position? I think this is such a key component of a healthy body. If you have zero awareness, you don't know, and you're just going by someone told you on Instagram or a yoga teacher, you are not in tune with your body. So that's, I think, that's the first thing I kind of help people find their true alignment. So I would say if I had a room full of class, I think the first thing I would say is like, okay, let's start with your feet. Where you are weight bearing. Is it on your heels? Is it, are you locking your knees? Mm-hmm. Where is your pelvis in relationship to your feet? Is it behind your feet or in front or in right above your feet? Where is your ribcage? And then where is your head? So these are my blocks that I talk about. So Jenga blocks.
Yes.
The better the Jenga blocks are placed, the less effort the system is going to have to do. And it's going to be a very, so optimal posture, if we talk about the definition, is like the most energy efficient position. So meaning your muscles are not working too hard to keep you there. So you don't have to tighten your core. You don't have to tighten your glutes. You don't have to do anything or hold your breath. You're going to be there in the most relaxed position and no one can move you out of that position. Your core is going to activate automatically. So I start with the feet and I cue them to bring the weight gently over to their arches, because that's the most resilient part of the foot. That's where it's almost like shock absorber hammock like structure. Heel is just this rigid part of the foot. So most of the times when they bring their body weight slightly forward, they automatically start to feel, and they unlock their knees. Right away, they feel a little activation in their core. I don't have to do much. I don't have to tell them where to bring them. Things start to move right away. And they have a better, although they do feel that they're falling forward, and then I tell them it's their vestibular system being funky because it has been trained to be in this backward position, chest up, and, you know, in that neck high, that kind of a position. So it's going to need time to adjust. But, and then again, like, yeah, of course, like I would go on to talk about their pelvic mobility. And I do, before I can kind of get into that, into the standing position, I treat isolated movement of the pelvis, what we call pelvic clock, anterior, posterior pelvic tilts, finding their neutral spine, because a lot of people may be born with more lumbar lordosis than other. Like I have completely flat back.
Of course.
Flat. So my neutral is very different than someone else's. And then the rib cage. I think rib cage alignment is a lot more important. Can you bring it over the pelvic bowl? Is it a little too high lifted in a lifted up position? If it's there, you're not going to be able to engage your diaphragm. It's always, the air is just going to go into your upper lobe of the lungs and just going to go out. It's not even going to reach the lower lobes. And then can you, so the other cue that I use is, can you bring the sternum, your breastbone, and feel that it's just nicely floating on a cloud, which is basically your abdominals. Not sinking, wow. Not lifted off, but nicely floating over your belly.
I'm standing and doing what you're telling me. And as you're talking, I'm doing the cues and I cannot tell you how good I feel. I'm having this private physio session with your absolute brilliant mind. I can't tell you how lucky I feel right now, because it's like, it's truly enlightening feeling your body resting. It's hard work in some ways. I feel my glutes quivering. Not that they're gripping at all, but I just did a heavy glute session. And obviously now coming into this alignment that you're describing, they're starting to just jiggle around a little bit, but I can breathe. Yeah. And it feels amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah. And very good point. And the breathing is going to just, I think the best way to know if you're in a good posture is when your breath feels least, like most efficient. Like, the air just goes in. It just like, it just flows into your lungs. I think that's the best cue. So,
Wow.
Now I'm just thinking, like, it's true that, you know, these are the cues that I use no matter who is coming in, and mostly work. So it could be something that yoga teachers can use in their class.
Absolutely. Like, this is helping me so much. I'm learning so much. Honestly, thank you for sharing all this. I can't tell you how valuable this is being. I'm looking at the time regretfully. I mean, one thing I did want to give you a chance to answer is this: is there anything that you feel is very important on this topic that you want to mention that I maybe haven't thought of the question, but you're like, oh, this one thing, man, like, come on, guys.
Yeah. I think what we just talked about, breath, I didn't get much time to talk about it. And I think people are becoming aware of it. And I'm really happy to know how much emphasis is being given to the breathing quality nowadays. I mean, from James Nestor's book to Huberman Lab, and, you know, I'm so glad that more and more people from different areas of life are talking about it, and not just the yoga teachers, because you're like, oh, there's another yoga teacher talking about breath. There's another physio talking about breath. I'm really happy. Now I just, you know, my patients who are more cynical, like, okay, just listen to Huberman Lab, you know, he's a neuroscientist, just listen to him, you know, and they're more receptive. So, you know, it's really, I'm happy that this is happening. And the whole, the better your breath, I think the automatic core engagement, the breath, because diaphragm is also part of the core.
Stability, exactly, it's a stabilizer.
Stability. So it's super important that we have efficient breathing pattern as well. And you will know, like, if your system is working fine, your breath is not going to feel effortful. So I think if one cue you could take out from listening to us today is, what is the quality and depth of your breath? And if that's good, most likely you're activating your core just fine. Just stick with that thought and see where it takes you. And I've seen this, like, a lot of people who have good, efficient breathing pattern, I don't have to teach them about core.
Hey, my loves, real quick, if you are hypermobile, be sure to check out my book, Too Flexible to Feel Good, where my co-author and I share the latest science on how to help a bendy body feel awesome. If you already have the book, please do leave it an Amazon review. It helps more than you could ever know, and it just might help someone else feel a bit more stable in their bodies. The book is called Too Flexible to Feel Good, and you can get it from most online retailers. So listen, how much time have you got? Because I have another question, and I just want to make sure that I'm not taking, because I recognize that you're a busy woman, and I want to be respectful of your time. But one of the things that yoga is teaching, which I think, gosh, I'm really putting my neck on the line saying this, when Ashtanga yoga was created, I think there was a slight appropriation which happened in that they took ancient practices that were meant to be done as kriyas in sitting, as separate practices, and Patabi Joyce put them in the movement practice, and one of which was ujjayi breathing, which is obviously the contraction of your glottis while someone is moving. And I firmly believe, having worked with vocal coaches to rectify the damage that this did to my vocal cords, that this is something that is, we shouldn't be marrying the two up in terms of movement, deep, engaging your bandhas against the resistance of your glottis, I think is causing more problems than it's intending to solve. So I don't think it started with a negative intention, but I don't think people who fully understood the body married the use of ujjayi breathing with movement and deep core activation, quote unquote. Okay. It's not true activation if it's rigid, of course. But you spoke about someone being on the toilet and utilizing the glottis to force. You've now spoken about how the air should just rush in. But yoga community is literally gripping their poor little throats until kingdom come. And I wonder if that's partly involved in terms of core control, because it's engaged in the pressure system. And just any advice that you have around this topic would be amazing.
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. I haven't really experienced ujjayi breath in different, with different movements. So I don't know, but I will try to answer this question. What you said, engaging of the glottis with the diaphragm and the pelvic floor, it's, the glottis is the part of the pressure system. So how open or closed it is going to determine how our intra-abdominal pressure is. So sometimes we, for example, if you're lifting super heavy weight, like you're really like a power lifter needs to really do it, Valsalva maneuver, but they also grunt, you know, the grunting allows that little release of the glottis. So how much we are tensing the glottis should depend on the task at hand. I don't think it's a uniform, again, this blanket cue that, oh, just engage your glottis and use the same ujjayi breath with no matter what movement you're doing. I don't think that makes sense. But correct me if I'm wrong, can you not modulate how much you are engaging your vocal cords with ujjayi, or it's always has to be the same intensity?
I think people don't have the neuromuscular control. And also, when I interviewed a vocal coach, you know, he said very clearly that when you're breathing, the vocal cords are open, completely open, no tension. And when you are making sound, they need to be fully shut. And they flutter to create the sound. There shouldn't be a halfway mark where they are tense and held, and air shouldn't be rushing past them, because that air rushing past those structures is very damaging, because they're extremely delicate. And so I guess just hearing you speak about the way that we use it in terms of going to the loo and our breathing should be relaxed, I thought, oh, maybe you got some additional insights.
Yeah, I mean, I would say to that, like, we do treat vocal cords as well. So for example, if someone, you're saying, like, if, you know, just hearing someone talk, that they're not creating enough pressure, so their vocal cords are not completely closing, tells us that their pressure system is not working efficiently. So if the pressure system is not working efficiently, they may need to use their abdominals more than they need to. So like, pressure system is supposed to just put you in that position, and, you know,
it happens.
Abdominals need to, don't need to work as hard, because the pressure is keeping everything in check. So we do use, when I said that not to use the, close the glottis when you're sitting on the toilet, I don't mean that you cannot use a strategy to include the glottis. Like, we, for example, for people who have, let's say, post-abdominal surgery, or their abdominals are weak, or they have poor peristaltic movement, people who do not feel the urge for whatever reasons, we do teach them to do a mooing sound, which is like a deep, you know, contracting the top abdominal muscles, but not completely closing the glottis. So we do a like a very deep exhale, which helps contract the upper abdominals, but simultaneously open the pelvic floor. Because what happens when the lower abdominal muscles contract, the pelvic floor contracts with it. So the outlet is obstructed. We call it, the name of the condition is outlet obstruction, actually, when people are not able to go because the pelvic floor tightens up on them. But using the glottis, and that's what why I said, like, I think ujjayi in my head, I had, although I haven't really used it as much, and maybe I should, we should be training people for modulating how much air they're releasing, like a deep exhale, a less intense exhale, like how much you are closing or opening your glottis. Isn't that what ujjayi is supposed to do for us? Like that improving their neuromuscular control. I think I would use it for that. And I'm a huge fan of Mary Massery, and she's the one who brought the soda can model into the picture and the pressure system. And she works with a lot of pediatric clients, and she uses the glottis a lot to develop voice and control the, improve the abdominal strength, actually. So some of the times we also use like this cue of like slowly exhaling or using ujjayi breath sometimes to activate the core when people have just absolutely shut down. They don't know how to activate the core. We use this cue, and Julie Weeb's famous blow before you go comes from that too. Like, you're slightly creating this positive back pressure in your airways, which actually helps activate the core. I don't know if that answers your question, but
well,
I think
kind
could, so
of.
Much could be done
I
with
think
the
obviously
breath.
Using your vocal cords 100% by that you said, but we have to remember that when we are using sound, the vocal cords are shut and they flutter to create the sound, and blow before you go, the vocal cords are open. So utilizing them in terms of pressure modulation is something that, like, looking at some of the research and also talking to the vocal coach, he was like, this halfway point of stiffness, that actually neuromuscularly what happens is people then develop this stiff, rigid, held position. They can't then fully close and they can't fully open. And that's what he was saying, was like, we need to be careful.
So it's kind of same as like tightening the core. And so
exactly.
There is no, again, there is no excursion of the vocal cords either. There should be a nice opening and closing and not staying stuck in that middle position all the time. So
exactly.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. It definitely can definitely, you again, like how we are saying, not to stay stuck in one position. Your body needs to learn, whether it's vocal cords or pelvic floor or diaphragm,
to move
in and out of a position. So I think that's super important for sure.
Yeah, because I think when I started putting information about the Ujjayi breath out there, again, it was a tough time for me, because again, a lot of people were very attached to that as a practice. But so many other people wrote to me going, I can't let go. I can't not Ujjayi breathing. Like when I think about it, I realize how much tension I'm carrying. And then other people were like, I've had a chronic cough for 2 years and I couldn't work out what the issue was, but I thought I was living in a polluted city and I just have to accept it. But since I started relaxing my vocal cords, my cough has gone away.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, amazing.
Can I add one quick exercise for this that I learned?
100%, please.
So this is usually, I mean, if someone is having difficulty, it's like vocal cords, how do you treat that? Like, how do you relax that? There's no, can you hold it like any other muscle? Can you stretch it? So this is a thing that we do, and we kind of like put our fingers on one side of the voice box and deviate it to the other side and create sound like, like a deep and then, so like you're doing different pitch sounds like with a,
feels amazing.
And then move it to the other side and do the same thing. And a lot of times there may be a little restriction of partial restriction here that you can release by just gently, again, very gentle, move and create sound with it, soft sound, deep sound, different kinds of, this is an exercise that we do a lot with the opera singers because they're always very high pitched. So they sometimes have a lot of vocal cord issues.
And this is a fantastic suggestion. Sorry, continue.
And because of that, pelvic floor issues too. So yeah, I mean...
really? I didn't know that. So hang on, just backtrack 1 second. Opera singers, because they're so high-pitched, are developing pelvic floor issues?
I mean, they can, because depending on, again, how they're modulating the voice production, and if the pressure... if they are bearing down with that strong voice production. The bearing down is basically what causes pelvic floor issues. So we teach them how to kind of contain that pressure within the abdominal cavity and create that support from below, from, you know, the pelvic floor.
Can I just say, how fascinating is your job, right?
I love it. Yes,
it's
absolutely.
So good. I just want to listen to you all day long. And I wish I was in New York so I could come and see you. You could get your hands on my body. That would just be the best thing. Just hearing you talk revealed so much to me about my body. I've learning, like I said many times already, so much. Thank you for being here and giving up your time and sharing your genius. A slight detour now on terms of a quick question. This is a quick question. If you could give the whole world one message, what would Mukta's message to the world be?
Oh, wow. That's a tough one because I have a lot of messages. Okay. I think because I'm extremely passionate about pelvic health, I think one thing I would say is we need to take the shame out of this. So many people need help and there is help available, but the shame, the taboo, the culture, the society has kept all of us in a little corner. And if I could give this message out and whoever is listening, there is nothing TMI when it comes to your pelvic health. So share your experience. Just from my first patient who, despite being a nurse practitioner, despite being in the medical field, did not even think about discussing her sexual health with her medical provider, do not be that person. You never know how these things could connect to your overall health. So please discuss if anything is going on with your, let's not normalize anything that's going on there. Discuss it, understand your body, because your pelvis is connected to the rest of the body and it can really reveal a lot about your health. So that would be my message.
That's a beautiful message. Thank you so much for empowering us, because as I said at the very beginning of our chat, there is so much shame attached to this part of our bodies, and particularly for women. You know, we're always told that, oh, you know, you're a bit crazy because it's that time of the month. You know, we kind of are told how nuts we are all the time, and oh, don't be such a pussy, you know, like it's a negative thing. Or I could go on and on about this, but I won't. And there's just so many negative connotations around our pelvic health. And guys, I just want you to know how precious and valuable and beautiful and wonderful and scientific and awesome and mind-blowing these parts of your body are. So honor them. Thank you for that amazing message to finish. Mukta, where can people find out more about you?
So I am very active on Instagram. You can find me. My handle is thepelvic.connection. That's my place. I love to educate people. Extremely passionate about pelvic health and especially pelvic pain. So come connect with me. We'll have more of these conversations. I'm very active in my DMs as well, as if I have nothing else to do, but I'm addicted.
I think you're very, you just really love helping people because you're so passionate about this topic. I just want to say thank you for the content you put out there. I learned so much from you. I think you are such a brilliant educator, and I wish you had 3 million followers, 5 million followers, a whole billion followers, because you so deserve it. I wish there was just more curiosity and the attention span to actually settle on a topic and really divulge it, because the way you explain things is so good. So what's your future plans? What's next for you?
Next for me is I'm thinking about creating some online courses as well. I have a few topics. I'm thinking about pelvic pain, again, is an extremely a topic that's very close to my heart, pain in general. So I want to address it from a biopsychosocial perspective, and not just, like, I want to really peel people away from this biomedical approach all the time, like tissue is the problem. I want to explore pain in many different ways and help people explore it with me. So that's what I'm going to be doing in 2023. So watch out this space.
I am sitting on the edge of my seat waiting for that to come out. Mukta, thank you so much for sharing your genius. Guys, please check her out on Instagram at the very least, thepelvic.connection. And I'll be linking all of her website details from my website where all the show notes live. Thank you, Mukta. It has been an absolute honor.
Thank you so much, Celeste. It was wonderful. I loved every bit of it.
Thanks for listening, everyone. That was part 2. Next week, we'll be welcoming a new guest. Remember, if this episode was helpful at all, please do share, rate, and review.